Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
I want to welcome you to Conversations Live. I'm Vicki St. Clair. You know, it's been described in the past as a poor man's banana. Others describe it as a bandango, a cross between a banana and a mango. And it's the only member of the custard family that grows outside of the tropics. For centuries, it's been used medicinally for maladies from cold sores to head lice. And it's now being noted for its potent cancer-fighting properties. Coming up around 12:30, we'll talk with writer and gardener Andrew Moore about his obsession with America's largest indigenous fruit and how it's been memorialized in folk songs and poems and inspired dozens of place names from Georgia to Illinois. But first, we have cold and flu season coming up, and one of the best ways to prevent catching everything that comes our way is to strengthen our immune system. Returning guest Dr. Mitchell Gaynor shares what we can do to boost our immune system starting today. And I sat down with him a couple of weeks ago talked with him in detail about this. And we're going to bring that conversation to you in just a moment. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back to introduce Dr. Mitchell Gaynor. Please stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
1150kknw.com. It's why they invented the internet. We think. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, as I said, we're going to have a tape recording for you right now. I sat down with Dr. Mitchell Gaynor a couple of weeks ago. We talked about building your immune system. He's the founder and president of Gaynor Integrative Oncology and Gaynor Wellness in New York City. And his latest book, The Gene Therapy Plan, Taking Control of Your Genetic Destiny Through Diet and Lifestyle, provides a revolutionary approach to reverse gene damage associated with aging, cancer, obesity, and diabetes, and other things, of course. And he joined us a couple of months ago to discuss taking control of your genes. If you'd like to hear that conversation, you can go to conversationslive.net, search for Dr. Mitchell Gaynor on the May 11th, 2015 show. But today, as I said, we're going to talk about the immune system. Dr. Gaynor also serves as the Director of Medical Oncology at the Strand Cancer Prevention Center in New York. And he was the former medical director and director at the Weill Cornell Medical Center for Complementary and Integrative Medicine in New York. And he's also the creator of GeneChanger.com. But we're going to go ahead and bring this interview to you right now on how to boost your immune system ready for cold and flu season. Right, so Dr. Gaynor, if we could begin with explaining what the immune system is and where it resides in our body so we can get a better picture of this.
Well, the immune system is predominantly in several places. The majority of your immune system happens to be in your gut, and that's why it's so important that you have good gut health and have good healthy bacteria in your gut, because that's really the only way that part of your immune system can function properly, and it's known in medical terms as GALT, or gut-associated lymphoid tissue. And the other part of your immune system are known as natural killer cells. These are cells that protect against viruses, help protect against cancer cells, and they're a type of lymphocyte in your bloodstream, also found in the thymus gland, which is in the neck, and found in fairly large amounts in both the liver and the spleen.
And so since we've got the cold season coming up right now, let's look at some of the ways that we can help boost that. There are so many products on the market. Should we be skeptical about products we can buy that say they can boost our immune system?
I think, you know, you have to be skeptical of any claims, you know, for a variety of different supplements, but that doesn't mean there are not a lot of foods that you can't eat that 100% help your immune system.
So let's look at those top foods, and I'm guessing they're in the colorful food category that we've talked about so many times on the show before.
They can be. Probably, if you look at several things that are both immune boosters and have a lot of antiviral and antibacterial activity, that would include garlic. And garlic is an allium vegetable, and it contains something called allicin. And that not only fights infection, viruses, bacteria, it has been found to reduce the incidence of colds and flus, and also induces detoxifying enzymes that help rid your body of toxins, and those types of toxins also damage the immune system. Another spice that does that is oregano. Oregano has profound antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory properties, also very good for helping control inflammation in the gut. And the third one is rosemary. Rosemary and rosemary oil are excellent for the immune system and for inducing detoxifying enzymes. Some other foods that are very important are probiotic foods like Greek yogurt with added cultures, or just to take a probiotic supplement, because having the right bacteria in your gut is absolutely key to having a healthy immune system. And then certain grains like oats and barley are very important because they contain a chemical called beta-glucan. And that is a type of fiber that breaks down into something called short-chain fatty acids in your small intestine, and that nourishes the good bacteria in your gut, and it's been found to boost immunity, help with wound healing. It even has been found to help antibiotics work better.
Wow. A couple of things there I was totally clueless about, so that's good to know. Let's just go back on a couple of those things. First of all, garlic, because a lot of people don't like to eat garlic. They don't like the aftertaste and the smell. Do garlic pills work as well?
Yes, you can get deodorized garlic supplements so that you don't have any of the bad smell, and they have very high allicin content. So, that's definitely an option.
And then the other one was you mentioned probiotics, and we need to make sure we've got the right kind of bacteria in our gut. But is there a way to measure that? Is that a guessing game?
It's not a guessing game. It's a matter of habit more than anything. So if you're going to take a probiotic supplement, you want to get one that contains one or more of the following bacteria: Acidophilus, Lactobacillus, or Bifidobacteria. And there's a huge link between your gut flora and your immune health. The other thing that you can do is you can have fermented foods like miso and sauerkraut. Those are loaded with probiotic good bacteria, and also Greek yogurt with kefir cultures. But I would stress with that, you want to get one without any added refined sugar.
Okay. And so talking of sugar, what kind of foods tear down our immune system? What kinds of foods are detrimental to a good, healthy immune system?
There are a number of foods that are quite detrimental to the immune system. One is refined sugar, white flour. Those are very difficult to digest. And they are very hard on the good bacteria in your gut and often result in something called dysbiosis, which is just a bad, having too many bad bacteria in your gut. And the result of that is you have your gut churning out inflammatory chemicals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and these inflammatory chemicals wreak havoc on every aspect of your immune system. Some things you can do to help counteract that also are things like sweet potatoes. That's one of the best foods you can have because they're loaded with carotenoids, and they really help protect against a lot of things that you get in fast and refined foods. The other thing you want to avoid is heat-damaged vegetable oils. Most vegetable oils, when you heat them to very high heat, they form pro-inflammatory free radicals. These damage the gut bacteria and compromise the immune system. So the best cooking oil by far is organic coconut oil. Mm-hmm. That has what we call the highest smoke point, so it's not damaged by high heat. Second best is cold-pressed grapeseed oil. Third best is just organic butter. And you want to have olive oil regularly because that is very nourishing for the immune system, but you don't want to cook with the olive oil because you denature all the immune-stimulating nutrients in olive oil if you heat it. So it's best either drizzled on something that's already been cooked or something that's raw, like vegetables or salad.
Right. And so I read that sleep is critical for a healthy immune system. First of all, is that correct? And secondly, so many people are running on not enough sleep these days. They're trying to cram so much in. How does that affect the immune system?
Well, it's been found that people that are sleep deprived have profound drops in every aspect of their immune system. People who work in shifts that are varying, go to bed late or don't have regular sleep patterns, they have profound drops in their immune system. And, something related to that is stress. We know that stress, they've done studies in patients with cancer, for instance. People with the most stress, the most depression, have the most profound drop in the very part of the immune system that's responsible for preventing a recurrence of cancer and preventing infection.
Oh, interesting. So, and talking of medicine, I want to just look at allergies a bit because, you know, so many people suffer from allergies. And tell me if this is true, because I read that the medicine you take suppresses unwanted responses. But my question is, if so much of our immune system is in our gut, how is taking that medication affecting our digestive tract, if at all?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on how much of the medication and which medication you're taking as to whether it's going to really, you know, affect your immune system long term. One of the best things you can do if you do have allergies, and I just seen this in so many patients, is so many people are walking around with both allergies and autoimmune illnesses with profoundly low vitamin D3 levels, and that's one of the things I talk about in the gene therapy plan, is everybody should know their D3 level. Almost nobody gets enough D3 in their diet. That's responsible for immune health, brain health, cancer prevention, bones, but the fact of the matter is, if you eat a perfect diet for D3, you're eating salmon every day, you're eating cottage cheese, you're eating yogurt, the most you can get is 350 units. The least anybody needs is 1,000. Some people, if you're living in an area where there is not a lot of sun, you need like 5,000 units. So it's not something people should guess about, but anybody with any type of autoimmune problem, or, you know, frequent colds or allergies must know their vitamin D level. And I've seen it clear up when they're supplemented so many times.
Okay. And so if we're feeling fatigued and we have some of this, you know, lethargy and we go to our doctors, I mean, are there specific tests that they will do for autoimmune deficiency?
Absolutely. I recommend one is, you know, the vitamin D, but also you want to check something called your C-reactive protein that looks for underlying inflammation in your body. It's very helpful to do food allergy testing. That's just a blood panel that you can do. And it's good to look for heavy metal toxicity, especially mercury, because of a lot of my patients that I see have very high mercury levels and we're completely unaware of it.
Right, right. Well, great information as always, Dr. Gaynor. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Basically, you know, the other things that I would just suggest, make sure, you know, your zinc level, because a lot of people can take like 50 milligrams or 25 milligrams of zinc as a supplement every day. That helps the immune system, and also selenium. Our soils become very deficient in selenium, so 200 micrograms a day of selenium is also critical for your immune system.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we'll definitely point listeners to the last conversation we had on your book, The Gene Therapy Plan. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And again, that was Dr. Mitchell Gaynor. His book, The Gene Therapy Plan, Taking Control of Your Genetic Destiny Through Diet and Lifestyle. And he's the creator of GeneChanger.com, GeneChanger.com. Lots of information up there, too. And you can find his first conversation with us talking about taking control of your genes on May 11th, the May 11th, 2015 show on conversationslive.net. Or you can just shoot me an email and I'll be happy to send you the link. And he mentioned during that the importance of sleep, and I happened to hear this morning on the radio about a new study that was just published in a medical physician's journal. And they said, they talked about sleep. They said less than 5 hours and more than 9 hours leads to, or in the study, it led to clogged blood vessels. They don't know why yet, but the cardiologist spokesperson for the American Heart Disease Association stressed again how important sleep is to our overall health, and in relation to this study in particular, to our heart. He said hormones, metabolism, inflammation, they're all affected by sleep, and that obviously impacts our health. The ideal, of course, is what we've been hearing for years, 7 to 8 hours. But of course, now they're finding out that more about the negative side of not getting enough sleep. The other thing that we didn't talk about in the conversation with Dr. Gaynor is environment. And if you're not happy where you're living, that can have a big effect on your immune system too. And so I saw this study, the top 100 best places to live. And guess what was number two on that? This is right across America. Number two was Bellevue, Washington, one of the best places to live. Number 20 was Olympia, Washington. And number 25 was Kirkland, Washington. And I think then we went down to like number 53, which was Bend, Oregon, up here in the Northwest. But so we've got some good living space up here in the Northwest, even though we're heading toward winter now. But we've got some tricks under our sleeves to help us boost our immune system. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking with Andrew Moore about his obsession, and not just his obsession, but apparently quite a few people are obsessed with this fruit that's indigenous to America and is now being looked at seriously for its potent cancer-fighting properties. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back in just a short moment. You're listening to Conversations Live. If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard-approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Tell your friends, the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everybody. Sorry, we're having a few little technical glitches this morning. We have a new producer in the studio with us, and, you know, this is the first test run, I think. So just bear with us. We've got loads of great information for you today. My next guest is Andrew Moore, and... this was such an interesting book. I'll talk more about it when we introduce Andrew. So let me just introduce him, and we'll bring him on. He grew up in Lake Wales, Florida, just south of the Pawpaws Native Range. He's a writer and gardener. He now lives in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. His stories have been published in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Daily Yonder, and the Biscayne Times. And pawpaw is the fruit I've been talking about. And this is his first book. It's called Pawpaw in Search of America's Forgotten Fruit. And my guest is obsessed with this fruit, as you'll find out. His name is Andrew Moore. Andrew, welcome.
Vicki, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you. I saw this book, you know, it came in the mail with all the other stuff, and I thought, pawpaw. Okay, somebody wrote a whole book on pawpaws, and I got so engrossed in it because there's so much more to it than just talking about the fruit. You look at the folklore, you look at the history, you look at the medicinal benefits and some of the skepticism around the medicinal benefits. So let's just begin with this, Andrew. You asked the question at the beginning of the book. You say, I'm a gardener. Why have I not heard of the pawpaw before? And you say, on your first pawpaw hunt, you had no idea what to look for. You'd been told that the pawpaw was the largest of all edible fruits native to the U.S., but you'd never tasted and you'd never even seen one. So how did you get interested in this?
Yeah, you know, I got interested in the fruit because a friend invited me to the Ohio Pawpaw Festival. So I had no idea what it was. I was visiting a friend in the West Virginia Panhandle, and he said, I won't be there, but I'll be at this festival nearby in Ohio, so why don't you come? So I said, fine, I'll go and see what this is all about. And outside the festival fairgrounds are some woods, and as is typical in southern Ohio, the woods are filled with pawpaws. I went to the woods and started exploring, and there they were. They were all over, and fruit was in the trees. It was on the ground, and as you can tell from the book, I became obsessed after tasting those pawpaws in the woods.
Well, it's a really well-written book and really, really well-researched. You went right back to the beginning of time almost. I mean, you discovered that... you go back 56 million years, in fact. So let's just look a little bit about the history. They actually found fossils of pawpaw seeds, I believe, in 56 million years ago.
I believe in leaves going back. It's kind of hard to know exactly how far back, but the period that it dates back to includes, you know, up to 56 million years ago. So I said, you know, let's go ahead and assume it is around that far back, or give it that much time. And in fact, not just one site, you know, that same time period, fossilized fruits and remains from Mississippi and New Jersey. So, a pretty diverse area that the fruit went back to. And at that time, of course, there were no humans in North America. So the fruit wasn't for us. It was for those large megafauna, the mastodons and some of the other large mammals that may have eaten pawpaws and then dispersed it. They would have eaten it whole and carried it around and moved it.
Right. And you then of course you say that the Native American Indians took over carrying that fruit around and spreading the seeds. You talk about 16,000 years ago when the first known people in Pittsburgh were eating this.
Right, yeah, you know, just outside of Pittsburgh, where I live, is Meadowcroft, and this is the earliest known site of human habitation in North America. It dates back to at least 16,000 years, but more than likely also 19,000 years ago. There's evidence of humans in the area, and pawpaws. They're in the fossil record, and they're still there. So I think it's neat that eaten that long ago is still there on that same creek that attracted Native Americans at that time.
Right.
And the fruit is still there.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing. So for somebody who's sitting out there thinking, what the heck is the pawpaw?
Right, yeah, of course.
Let's describe the fruit. Let's describe what it looks like and what it tastes like.
Yeah, we have to. Let's start with what it looks like. You know, when it's in the tree, hanging from the branch, it actually does look like a mango. It's got this green color, and it's you know, sometimes it's just no plumper than a fig, but other times it's as big as a large mango in the trees. And as it ripens, it'll occasionally turn yellow, and then either fall or you can pick it from the branch, but most likely if you're in the woods, you're gonna find it on the ground. And then when you break it open, it's got this vibrant green, green to yellow pulp that tastes, we say tropical. We say like a mix between a banana and a mango. That's common. But as Sherry Crabtree, a pawpaw researcher in Kentucky, says, a pawpaw tastes like a pawpaw, just like a peach tastes like a peach. And you know that's true. It's its own thing. And after you taste enough pawpaws, you say, you know what? That's true. A pawpaw tastes like a pawpaw. But to give listeners and others, you know, an idea if they haven't yet had a pawpaw, I think one of the main reasons we say tropical or we say mango banana mix is because it doesn't taste like anything else you'll find in the North American woods. It's entirely unique, and it has this custard texture that's more common of tropical fruits than anything you'd find in the temperate north.
So it's part of the custard apple family. So what else is in the custard apple family?
Yeah, fruits like cherimoya, guanabana, also known as soursop in English, sweetsop, the custard apple itself, the sugar apple. All these wonderful fruits, there's thousands of them, and they're all found in the tropics, and the pawpaw is the only one that's not native to the tropics. It's the only temperate member of that family.
Mm. I remember reading when you said that when you first saw a pawpaw tree, and I say pawpaw, you say pawpaw.
I hear the same in my head, tomato, tomato.
I know, yes. So, but you say that when you first saw a pawpaw tree, you described it as a small ornamental hibiscus tree. You said that's just what it looked like, and you thought, how can this possibly be hardy enough to survive as it survived?
Yeah, you know, and I think what I was trying to get at that description was, you know, this it just seemed out of place to me. And perhaps, you know, there's other naturalists who are more informed than I who would scoff at such a statement. But, you know, really, it seemed like a tropical plant. And what I was trying to describe was, you know, my astonishment that there was this tropical-seeming thing that A, exists here in Ohio, and B, I hadn't heard of it, you know. And I just couldn't get over that fact that there was such a neat thing that so many of us either had never heard of or had forgotten about.
Yeah, and you know, they say there was just so much wonderful information in this. I mean, I don't know how long did this take you to put together the book?
I first learned about pawpaws 5 years ago this weekend. This is pawpaw season. So I first learned about that fruit 5 years ago, and then about a year afterward, after just being obsessed, I traveled to Kentucky State University's international conference that they have. Occasionally, they don't have those conferences often, and I met the people who had been working with pawpaws for years, some of them for decades. And you know, I was drawn into the fruit itself, to the botanical history, and then when I met the people who had devoted their lives to this fruit, I knew that I wanted to write a book after I'd come across these wonderful people and these human stories that are as much a part of the pawpaw as the plant itself.
Yeah, and you just mentioned Kentucky State University, the conference they have there, and Kentucky State University, you say, is the only university in the U.S. that actually studies pawpaws.
Yeah, the only university with a dedicated research program for the pawpaw. There's other places, Ohio University, some folks in Iowa and elsewhere that include pawpaw in their research, but to have a dedicated pawpaw program is unique and valuable, and yeah, that's right, Kentucky's the only place that's doing that.
Yeah.
To compare that with, say, apples, where there's a number of land-grant institutions that have apple orchards and apple experiments, among other fruits, but yeah, it's the only place.
And so what conditions, there are 26 states, I believe, that where this grows naturally, but what conditions does it grow under?
Yeah, it actually grows under a wide variety of conditions. You know, in researching the book, I had traveled to as many of these diverse locations as I could, and I saw an experimental pawpaw orchard in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, trees that have been battered by hurricanes and, you know, as hot and humid as conditions can be. And I also saw pawpaw orchards in southern Michigan, where it's, you know, extremely cold winters, northern Illinois, you know, negative 30 degree temperatures. And the pawpaw survives and produces fruit in both locations.
Mm.
And everywhere in between. They grow in the wild, in the understory, commonly along rivers and streams and in the alluvial-rich soil. And then in orchard conditions, they can survive quite a bit. But they do like a rich soil and well-drained soil.
And so we don't see this in mainstream supermarkets. I know I've eaten it when I lived in San Diego many years ago. But why don't we see it on the shelves in most supermarkets?
Well, you can't eat a fruit if people aren't growing it. If you're not eating something, if it's not part of the diet or the commerce or even the culture of a people, you're not going to suddenly find it on the shelves. I guess it's a nuanced and kind of a long answer that I try to unpack throughout the book. But the idea is Americans used to eat pawpaws a lot if they grew near them, if they were on their property. And then as Americans slowly stopped going to the woods for food, stopped hunting wild fruits and vegetables and nuts and berries, it sort of got replaced, and you can kind of look at the demise of the pawpaw's presence in America. It coincides with the rise of, you know, a more homogenized industrial diet. You know, the rise of supermarkets, you know, we say that the pawpaw doesn't ship well and it doesn't have a long shelf life, and that's probably why it hasn't been brought into supermarkets or cultivation. But it's something that we've overcome in other fruits. You know, we've figured out a way to handle delicate figs and raspberries,
mm-hmm.
and we've gotten those around. So I think it's just a matter of remembering that we have this pawpaw out in the woods in the first place, potentially adding it to commercial orchards, even if that's, you know, just a few on a small farm, and then they end up at farmers markets or local food co-ops.
Right, right. So they say everything in nature has a place and has a role, and certainly the pawpaw does, because in your book you say that without the pawpaw, the caterpillars, well, it's the only host for caterpillars of the zebra swallowtail butterfly.
That's right, yeah. And without the pawpaw, the butterfly does not exist.
Yeah.
So if we don't have pawpaws, we don't have that beautiful butterfly, the black and white zebra swallowtail. You know, it's interesting that the give and take in nature. The butterfly eats pawpaw leaves, or the caterpillar. It's the larval host for the butterfly's caterpillar, and the pawpaw has these compounds in it, Anonaceous acetogenins. That are thought to repel goats, hogs, and even deer. And because of that, the butterfly has those compounds within it, and it's a natural defense mechanism against other predators.
Right, right. And it grows fairly well organically, I understand. It's not bothered by pests.
Yeah, you know, as a native plant, it doesn't really have the pests that peaches or apples or some of these other crops do. it evolved in this ecosystem, and it does fine. So there's a number of growers from large orchards to just folks with a few in their backyard, and they don't have to spray at all.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to an experimental grower in Louisiana, and he said he's never sprayed, never had to. There's no need to spray a pawpaw. So folks who are looking to, you know, even for their backyard, something that can be grown without pesticides and chemicals, the pawpaw is a potential candidate for that.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we're going to talk a little in. It's a very storied fruit. There's a lot of story behind it. For some reason, it's one of those fruits that people have memorialized in many different ways. Or there are streets and avenues and towns and plains named after it, and there are songs written about it, even though a lot of people haven't heard of the fruit. So we'll talk about some of that when we come back. It's very interesting. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Andrew Moore. His book is called Pawpaw, In Search of America's Forgotten Fruit.
A little boy sits in a pawpaw patch. He's out in the fields with the...
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Vashon Island, we cover the world of animals. This week, September 20th, it's a Talk With Your Animals Sunday with gifted animal communicator, medium, and Reiki master, Darcy Pariso. Darcy can help you talk with and learn about your animal friends or help you connect with animal or human loved ones on this side or the other. Plan to give us a call on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Don't touch that dial. You might miss something life-changing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Story goes, say his daddy's coming home soon. Looks at the stars, sees a man in the moon. His life's been filled with fairy tales that he don't know.
And welcome back, welcome back. Yes, there are songs about the pawpaw patch. And we are talking with Andrew Moore. His book is called Pawpaw, In Search of America's Forgotten Fruit. And we were talking a little before the break about how hard it is and how fairly easy it is to grow this plant, since it seems fairly resistant to pests and bugs and certain animals. And you said during the break, Andrew, that it does grow up here in the Northwest.
Yeah, that's right. One of the finest pawpaw nurseries in the country is One Great World, located in Oregon. And I know anecdotally I've heard of a Portland, Oregon pawpaw patch that people have been frequenting. So it appears that's a suitable climate for the pawpaw.
Mm. Well, let's look a little about some of the story behind the pawpaw. Some of the, you know, I said that streets have been named after this. You've got towns, you say, in Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, Michigan, Kansas, that have been named after this. So talk a little bit about that and why you think that's happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, the pawpaw, you know, it's a funny fruit. It's got a funny rhyming name. It's folksy. It's unusual. I think even 100, 200 years ago, the folks coming across the pawpaw for the first time were amused by it. It had this fruit that's like nothing else, and you know, it's a beautiful tree. And in many places it grows in dense patches, and so that's why you have these towns, I believe, where they're named Pawpaw. People coming to that town, you know, the early pioneers as they were settling, looking for a name for it, if it was surrounded by pawpaws and they were eating them, it made sense to call it Pawpaw.
Yeah.
And Native Americans did this too. When we translate some of these Native American town names, we learn that they're called Pawpaw. There's a river and a mountain in Georgia, Alcove, and the original translation is Pawpaw Thicket River. You find the same in Louisiana in translated names, and even Pawpaw, Illinois was originally named Pawpaw Grove by the Potawatomi who lived there. So yeah, it's a fun fruit, an abundant fruit, and I think that's why it inspires you know, these town names. And the folk song "Way Down Yonder in the Pawpaw Patch" is it's a fun one, and that's something I've come across traveling the country and talking to people about pawpaws. It's always associated with a fond memory. You know, they remember picking it with grandparents. They remember going down to the river. You know, if you're interacting with a pawpaw, chances are it's, you know, late summer, early fall. It's a time of leisure. It's a time of pleasure, and it's you know, it's a good memories for a lot of people who did grow up with pawpaws, and I should mention that, you know, it's not totally forgotten. There's parts of the country and communities and cultures that didn't give up the pawpaw like the rest of us did.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly got a lot of reference to in history. Thomas Jefferson was known to have grown pawpaw. You say George Washington planted pawpaws at Mount Vernon. Walt Whitman wrote about them.
Right, yeah.
Audubon painted them. Lewis and Clark were sustained by them. So it certainly has a big place in history. So let's look a little about some of the health attributes around the pawpaw, because one of the things that they're looking at is the cancer-fighting properties of pawpaw.
That's right. Jerry McLaughlin, a researcher at Purdue, 30, 40 years ago, perhaps not that long ago, he isolated these compounds called annonaceous acetogenins. And of the 2,000 to 3,000 plants that he was working with, these were these most potent cancer-fighting compounds that he came across. And he did extensive laboratory research and eventually came up with a pill, an herbal supplement, and even conducted clinical trials and found that it killed cancer cells to much success. So that is available. That is out there. This pawpaw cell reg that people are using and continue to research. There's ongoing studies hoping that this might be a tool for fighting cancer.
Right, right. I also read that it's high in protein, antioxidants, vitamins A and C, and several essential minerals. It's also high in digestible niacin, which you say is way back when the Indians used it, the Native American Indians, they would dry it and mix the fruit into their corn cakes.
Yeah, that's right. There, one of few citations that remain from pre-colonial Native American foodways was of Iroquois drying pawpaw and cooking it into corn cakes. And I thought it was fascinating to learn that, you know, pawpaw happens to be high in niacin and corn is lacking in that. and that they were able to identify this and pair it, and it just seemed like such a sophisticated pairing of nutrients. And of course, it shouldn't be surprising, you know, these were sophisticated cultures and
yes.
cuisines.
Yeah.
And I just sort of lament what else we lost at that point of contact when these foods were changing. You know, there were probably lots of other great, also just tasty preparations, you know, that are sort of lost to history. But I'm thankful that you know, there are a handful of citations and notes, including that one that did stand out, and we can look to that.
So one thing I do want to point out, you also say this in the book, is that several reports indicate that eating pawpaw fruit leather, i.e. when it's dried, can lead to mild bouts of illness.
Yeah, just, you know, I hope this doesn't offend your listeners, but vomiting and perhaps diarrhea from eating fruit leather.
Which a lot of fruit can do for people.
Which
right.
A lot of fruit in high quantities can do, no doubt. It's not exclusive to pawpaw. But, you know, there's a lot of fruit leather is wonderful. It tastes great, and it allows you, either as a home consumer or as a producer of fruit, a farmer, to extend the harvest. You know, if all these pawpaws are going to rot, or if you can't find a home for them, if you preserve it with fruit leather, it's a great tool. But again, we don't know why it's happening. More than likely, when you dry it, it changes the chemical composition. Perhaps a higher dose of acetogenins is present. We don't know yet. You know, there's a lot of research to be done. But again, citations say that Native Americans were doing it. So, you know, how they did that, it's at this point, we just don't know. We've lost some of that information. So.
So you've
you know, in some ways, that's the fun thing about pawpaw is it's something we're still discovering and learning about. And people who experiment, home cooks, chefs, food scientists even, can figure some of this out. There's a lot to learn, and I think that's fun.
Yeah. So we're almost at the end of our segment, Andrew, but what's like a really big wow factor for you when you were doing your research, because you've really researched this thoroughly?
Boy, to put me on the spot to find, you know, I do have an answer for you. And the thing that most struck me and that I take away from this is researching the book allowed me to go places I probably wouldn't otherwise have a reason to go to and ask questions of people. And finding people who hadn't forgotten the fruit, you know, whose communities and cultures still remembered eating them and still did. Eastern Kentucky, for example, I went to a farmer's market in Pikeville, and pawpaws were on the table at the farmer's market. You know, it wasn't a new fruit there. It was something that people, particularly the older residents, just knew, and every September they went out and picked them, and it was just part of a normal annual ritual and routine. And
mm-hmm.
it was really a pleasure getting to know some of those folks and those food traditions and seeing them as a living culture, not something that had completely faded away. You know, in many ways, the pawpaw story is a revival, but in other ways, it's alive and thriving in other parts of the country.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear you say on your blog that you met a ton of people that are doing interesting things related to organic and sustainable agriculture around this and other things, so that's good to hear. The book is called Pawpaw in Search of America's Forgotten Fruit. My guest, Andrew Moore. Andrew, what would the final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I just hope you can get out there and find some pawpaws. We're in the middle of pawpaw season, so you got a couple weeks. You can get out there and find them.
And tell us again where that place was in Oregon that's growing them.
One Green World, and they're a nursery. They may have fruit, but more than likely they're not producing fruit. But you can buy trees from them, and in a few years you'll have your own.
There you go. That sounds like a plan.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Andrew. Appreciate your time today, and I really enjoyed the book. It's full of fascinating facts and interesting stories.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you, Vicky.
And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. If you have questions or comments on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7000. 7617. We do transcribe most of the shows. This one will be transcribed. So if you'd like a transcription, you can let me know at info@conversationslive.net. info@conversationslive.net. You can also find us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And you can find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And again, our 800 number is 495-7617. 800-495-7617. We'd love to hear from you. And until next week, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.